You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Rouge, White, and Blue CFL podcast, the American podcast about Canadian football. My name's Oz Davis. I'm one of the three bananas hosting this show. Joining me, as always, as he has from episode number one, is my co-host from Wisconsin, Joe Pritchard. Joe, how has the last, what, two, three, four, five, six, 7 weeks been for you?
It feels like it's been that long anyway. Right. I don't know if you realize this, but we're not the only ones from down south doing CFL podcasts these days.
Oh, but we're the best. Like, who else is doing CFL podcasts?
Well, there's a Red Blacks podcast out there now called the Wood Cookie Sawcast that Rod Villagomez has just debuted as of, well, we're recording on Thursday. You'll probably be hearing this on Friday. So yeah, he debuted Wednesday this week. So yeah, brand new. I haven't even had a chance to listen to the whole thing yet, but yeah, that's out there. And wow. I believe I came across another one too from, I believe, Tampa, Florida, but I can't remember the name offhand. I wish I did.
Okay. All right. Well, let me know, because I still maintain we're the CFL podcast by Americans, because that is a Red Blacks podcast. We don't specialize here at the Rouge. also joining us, as always, is our number three man, last but not least, certainly. He is the masked avenger of the single point score. He is known as Dr. Rouge. Dr. Rouge.
How are you? You are getting really, really, really ready for the start of the season.
Hey, man, I'm just doing my standard reps.
And, you know, I've been thinking since the last time that the three of us have spoken, it does appear that Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un are going to sit down and talk together. So perhaps the chance of the CFL season being lost to nuclear holocaust has gone down.
I thought you were telling me so maybe there's hope that the Alouettes will have a winning season by the end of the decade.
Well, I mean, technically, if the season doesn't happen, they wouldn't have a losing season.
Well, they'd be 0-0, 500.
See? And they didn't have very many W's last year. What difference would it make?
Man, you're raining or snowing on the parade there, Dr. Rouge. I was hoping in the event of nuclear war, we're all going north.
I absolutely love Montreal. I have been there not often enough. May try to sneak up there for a game this season. It's climbed back to respectability for that franchise, but I think it has bottomed out. And so better days are ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, let's hope so.
Unless Kim dropped the bomb.
Right, exactly. And I was just going to say, and also on the Korean Peninsula. Right.
In any case. Well, if we want to ensure though that North Korea never does hit us with a nuclear missile, should just have the Alouettes coach their launchers.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think there's a CFL podcast on the Korean Peninsula?
Wow.
There is one from Tokyo. So we're close.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
That's right. That's right. There is.
Interesting.
I remember. Right. But anyway.
Joe, do you know that Oz is kind of, he's getting a little hot under the collar this week. You know that?
Well, no, I had no clue.
Well, yeah, I know.
I was just going to say, I got to get myself worked up again, because we're 6 minutes into this thing and we've already been denigrated from, you know, the only American podcast about Canadian football to something not at all unique at all. So let's get to the football. Sadly enough, and, you know, to me, this is a little bit ironic, because during the break, I actually met a couple of ladies from Canada, and I was just talking to them about Canada, and sure enough, you know, the topic of sports came up. Imagine that.
There's no such thing as a break. Didn't you listen to the commissioner? It go from the regular season to the postseason to the business season. What's this bright stuff?
Well, okay, all right. Well, I'll tell you what, though. All right, we're already tangenting from a tangent here, but I'll tell you what. You know, it's been a good 3 weeks since we recorded this podcast, mm-hmm. but not much has happened in those 3 weeks, would you mm-hmm. say? I mean,
I would agree.
So, like I was saying, and I was talking to these ladies about the CFL and how much I preferred it to the NFL, and one of the reasons I gave was that, you know, we don't seem to have as much of the, let's say, controversy of a criminal nature that we tend to have in the NFL in the CFL. But lo and behold, this week, myself and the league was made to look bad by Mr. Euclid Cummings. Now, I mean, this story is kind of – and again, it's kind of unfortunate that it happens during this what we'll call the business break. The business mm-hmm. season, I'm sorry, because as a result, you know, the headlines are dominated by this thing. It also, as there is some sexual assault involved in Mr. Cummings' activities and accusation, I guess, that this happened during, you know, International Women's Day, this sort of talk going on, mm-hmm. you know, this happens a couple of years after or the initial complaint in October of 2016 happened just within a couple of months of former Commissioner Orridge's new declaration on, you know, how we're going to handle domestic abuse in the CFL. And, you know, we're going to crack down. We're going to do investigations, da-da-da-da-da-da. So as a result, a lot of media on this, and you know, I just sort of clipped a couple of things, bookmarked a couple of things, if you will, in the internet age, you know, just sort of capturing the flavor of this thing. You know, we're beginning with a lot of articles talking about how the league is going to have to do some soul searching. You know, here at the Winnipeg Free Press is one that sort of reported it, as a lot of CFL stories go, from something of a local angle. Euclid Cummings, ex-Winnipeg Blue Bomber, arrested on 4 charges. You know, they bring up the point here that, and here's the quote. The quote is, "The fact that Cummings was able to sign with 2 teams after the alleged incident raises a number of questions about the league's vetting process when it comes to signing players." This was, and this story came out pretty much on the day the story was broken, the 8th of March, in the Montreal Gazette, I believe, is who broke the story that Cummings would be charged. The following day, in the Canadian, I believe it's Toronto-based National Post, we have a piece called "The CFL Lets Women Down." Pretty much sums it up. Here we have, you know, again, we're talking about the statement laid out by the CFL. Quote, "Sounds pretty extensive, like there would be a strict follow-up to the kind of investigation Cummings was facing. Yet that didn't stop the Edmonton Eskimos from signing Cummings as a free agent during the investigations. With the charges laid in April, you'd think that the CFL's history-making policy would at least take action then, but apparently the league wasn't following the case at all. We were unaware of the charges," quote-unquote, the Eskimo said in a statement this week. "I'm not sure how you could be unaware when the Winnipeg Blue Bombers were pretty much, not legally forced, but pretty much unspokenly forced to report this to the league that their player had been questioned by police regarding an incident previously." Now, pretty much this was all summed up by the TSN online. And if you want my opinion, the TSN website doesn't exactly spare the CFL the negative stories, if you ask me. And I think this is another example of a tee-off. And this, for me, is the part that I'd like you guys to answer to, the part that really I think we're all mulling over, this sort of string of questions. TSN asks, "So was it incumbent on someone to let the Eskimos know Cummings was the subject of an investigation a few months earlier and still might be? whose responsibility would that be? The league's, the Blue Bombers, his representatives? Oh, that's a good question. And would it have been fair to Cummings, who hadn't been charged at that time, for either the league or the Bombers to tell the Eskimos about the alleged incident before they signed him? What would Edmonton's reaction have been if they had told him after they had signed him? Right. Okay. So let's talk some responsibility. Who should take some responsibility here? For what? And what, if anything, must, not should, must be done? Joe, I'm going to go to you first because I know the doctor wants to speak. So, Joe?
Well, that's very nice.
Isn't it?
Well, this is a very difficult topic to really get right, in my opinion. Obviously, we want the league to be proactive. We want the league to be able to take care of making sure that they basically follow up on everything that they've been promoting over the last few years. Between the diversity of strength campaign, the bring it in campaign, the idea that everybody is a CFL, can be a CFL fan, can be a part of this family. And they seem to, it feels like they aren't quite sure how to do it. Between the Justin Cox situation, I believe that was last year, where the Riders cut him immediately upon news of charges, or maybe that was 2016. One of these last couple of years where the Riders basically had to give up one of their best defensive players straight away. Orridge would not verify a contract for him one way or the other, where they stepped in right away and did something. Then you have the Art Briles situation back last August, where the Ticats hired Briles, and the backlash was so intense that apparently the league stepped in and whispered in their ear to make them change their minds on it. But that was a slower reaction. And then while all of those things were going on, you have this, where you have a player that has formal charges laid in April of 2017, and apparently nobody's aware of it for almost a year. So it really kind of feels like the league has a different level of reaction depending on who knows what. It's almost like they wait for a reaction to happen before they step in.
But Joe,
and that's really not the way to go with it. They need to have a consistent policy, one way or the other. They need to be acting the same way across the board. Now, I believe that you and Dr. Rouge had differences as to how they should react, but they need to have a consistent policy across the board and enforce the same for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose so. But I did want to call you on one thing, Joe. You're like, no one was aware. But that's the point. Someone was aware. You know, that and because the CFL handled, you know, when you were going through and citing prior examples, you know what it sounded like to me? It sounded like the NFL, right? We've seen this in the NFL, right? Where you have the one instance where there's a public outcry, and then the dude whose video was seen by the commissioner now has to be reprimanded more than he had been before. You know, we've seen that case before. We've seen the case where it takes a public outcry for the league to change their mind, or a team or a player to change their mind on something. We've seen that in the NFL. And the CFL should be better than this. The CFL should be better than this, mm-hmm. I think. Doctor, you want to take a swing at some of this stuff?
One of the first questions you asked is, where does responsibility lie for what happened in April? To me, I think, you know, one person's opinion here. When the Blue Bombers cut their ties with Cummings, as far as I'm concerned, they didn't owe anybody an explanation. And what I mean by that is any official sort of exchange of details with any other team. And they certainly, you know, could have handled it with their fan base the way that the front office wished to. So I think in terms of where due diligence needed to go, the responsibility in terms of what happened in April, to me, lies in Edmonton. It was Edmonton's responsibility and the front office's responsibility to say, all right, if Winnipeg's not going to tell us something, can the folks in the league office tell us something? You know, we need to know, are we getting ourselves, are we considering picking up a player who's going to be able to be with us or who's going to be, a cloud over us for however long he is under contract? So I think that's one issue. I do agree with what the two of you have said in terms of this idea that the CFL needs to be either A, more proactive, or B, more consistent, or maybe both is probably the better way to say it across the board. Here, though, is the big, big challenge that you face. All right, you, the three of us are three general managers of any three teams in the CFL. We know that Cummings is available. We know that he's been cut by Winnipeg. The question we have to ask ourselves is he going to be a talented enough player to help us win? And as long as the question is, will he help us win over what kind of character are we getting, then this is going to continue to be a problem, you know, throughout all of sports, not just the Canadian Football League. You know, and then ultimately, I think the final thought, just in terms of summing up what I heard the two of you say, is that, you know, okay, let's blame Edmonton for not doing due diligence. Let's blame the CFL front office for either not caring enough or not following through enough. Let's blame Cummings, of course. You know, the first set of blame belongs to him for the actions in which he undertook. I get all that. But as long as we see the bar for players being on teams in terms of how good he is and whether we'll overlook or ignore his past as a result, this kind of thing's going to continue to happen.
You see, okay. That's a pretty measured and reasonable response, Doctor. So let me give you the unmeasured, unreasonable response. Okay? Mm-hmm. Look, you know what's funny about what you said? Here's what's funny about what you said. You said, okay, the question is, like, who takes responsibility? And then you're like, for April 2016 or whatnot. And then you said, okay, let's talk about the Eskimos first. No, the person who should take responsibility for this is Euclid Cummings, period. Look,
agreed.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't and look, people are going to get up in arms about me about this. But look, here's the truth, okay? Something happened on the street in October. It's not like nothing happened, okay? How often is it that when the police come to you 6 months later that the other party just made up something that involved sexual assault and, I don't know, regular, quote-unquote, assault? Who does that? How often does that happen? Okay, you know what? Guilty until proven innocent, too bad. You know what's funny? I'm sitting here looking at this TSN piece, right? And you know, in these difficult questions paragraph, right? One of the questions is this, quote, and would it have been fair to Cummings, who hadn't been charged at that time? No. So is it fair that this dude was born to be able to grow to be 6'6" and 300 pounds and utilize his skills in a way that millions of us would kill to do and not literally kill to do? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean. How is it fair that this guy gets to the benefit of the doubt? You know?
He gets the benefit of the doubt because he's talented. That's why he gets the benefit of the doubt. If I had my way, if there is an accusation against you, and I know this would never stand up in a court of law, I get that. If there's an accusation against you, you are sidelined with pay, but not allowed to play. And the moment that charges are filed, you should be dismissed from the team. That's the bar as far as I see it. I agree. This idea that we have to be kind or something to Cummings is a joke. The man was accused and subsequently charged with at least one, probably more despicable act. And just because he has enough skill to be a really good football player, to me, is not enough.
You know, it's what's twisted is this. What's twisted is this. If this had happened, if this dude had been, you know, playing against the Seattle Seahawks for the Minnesota Vikings or whatever, and something like this had happened, there would have been a gun involved. And now how would we be talking about it? You know? I mean, you this kind of stuff can't continue. And yeah, I like your plan, Doctor, and I'll tell you what, that would work really well in America. You know why? Because these guys who are charged would have to pay their slick-ass lawyers to find a way to get this to court in and out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what they're there for. They work the system to their advantage when it's convenient for them. Make them work the system when it's inconvenient to them. However, in the CFL, you have a bit of a problem there because, of course, salaries aren't so high, right?
But, again, until you have a fundamental change in what we as fans of sports, until we have the fundamental change that says we want guys with great talent and great character. And look, people make mistakes. I am perfectly okay with people who make mistakes. Sexual assault is not a mistake. All right. That is not a mistake. Driving 120 miles an hour down a freeway in the middle of the night, that's a mistake, provided nobody gets hurt. All right? You can stay on the team in a circumstance like that, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know there's a difference between sort of stupidity and violence. And you know, I agree. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if this gets to court and Cummings is acquitted, let's just say he is for sake of argument. If he's acquitted, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's incumbent upon the 9, and it might be 10 teams by time this is all decided, that 10 teams say, we don't want you back.
Right. Yeah. See, that would be fair. That would be fair.
And then therefore, let his attorney file a lawsuit and say, you're preventing my guy from working. To me, the response is, we're not preventing him from working. He's just not going to work for us. There's a difference.
Anyway. Okay, Joe. You want to get in some more on this?
Yeah, the one thing I worry about with your ideas, and believe me, I'm with you in spirit on the thought. I want to be proud of the league I cheer for. I, to be honest, I've lost some of my interest in football simply over the last 5 years with how corrupt college football is down here, with how the NFL is just continuing on its way to doing the same old, and still making a ton of money, and it's never going to change. But I still pour a lot of time and effort into this league, and I want it to be what it's saying it is. But the one thing that scares me about where you guys are going with this is, what is to keep somebody from making a false accusation right before a big game against the star player for one team?
Okay, but that person – okay, to do that, that I'm assuming Canadian law enforcement works similarly to American, okay? So to do that, that person is going to have to go to the police. – They're going to have to sound somewhat reasonable, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, the thing is, okay, look, what really jerks my chain about these sorts of arguments in like any sphere is that we're assuming that people aren't people, right? That people are these perfect little tools that the justice system can move around like chess pieces. But they're not. People are people. And look, if this – you know, if some dude wearing green and yellow goes down to, you know, the Winnipeg police station and says, this dude assaulted my girlfriend, you know, I mean, there's a very good chance the cop's going to look at him and say, huh? You know, WTF, I don't believe you. You know, I mean, cops don't believe people all the time. I mean, why would this be any different? You know, I mean, I don't know how it is in Canada, but, you know, I mean, you know, at some point, somebody has to make a call. And if the police can't make a call on a silly, you know, false alarm, I mean, come on now. Come on now. I mean, maybe as a society, we don't deserve sports. I mean, if it gets to that level, come on.
That might very well be, but you know, I think your point of how people are people and not just these perfect tools actually bolsters my argument, because it's easy for somebody to make a mistake on that, or for the right, you know, if you get the information, even if the police don't go for it, you get the information to just the right person that blows it out of proportion. All of a sudden, it's a story, and now we're talking about how the league isn't reacting. So all I'm saying is, we're never going to have a perfect scenario, but we have to be very careful about where we draw the line here, so that there is no way it can be abused, but yet we still have the league we want at portraying mm-hmm. the image we want, or actually living up to the image it wants to portray.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I cannot recall a situation where an NFL player was accused of something violent and he was kicked out of league or given a suspension or something like this, and it was innocent and unfounded. In fact, the only two cases –
Well, that's because the NFL won't have that knee-jerk reaction. But mm-hmm. if we have a league that does have that, mm-hmm. where if there's the accusation, that's the end of the ball game for that player for as long mm-hmm. as it takes for him to clear that up. If you have that be the automatic reaction, then you're asking for abuse.
Okay, all right.
So it's really hard for me to know exactly where to stand on this, because I want the league to be clean. I want the league to be the socially progressive league but then my question is, where is the perfect balance between, yes, we want to make sure that we have the right people in the league versus mm-hmm. let's not make it too easy for our good intentions to be manipulated.
Let me explain what I mean by accusation. All right. Cause Joe makes a good point that, you know, if we base it on, well, you know, somebody got a call at the police station. This is what I mean when I say accusation. A credible accusation that demands investigation is taking place. It's not just, you know, a phone call to the, you know, Vancouver or Edmonton or Calgary or Winnipeg or so-and-so down the line police department that says, hey, you got to know this happened last night.
Right.
You know, again, I'm talking about beyond just the initial phone call or visit to a police station. I'm talking about as the police have made a determination that there might be something here and it might very well be serious. To me, that's when you step in and say, you know what? It's probably best right now if the player steps to the sidelines, let this thing play out, and let's see how it goes.
Yeah, see, sometimes zero tolerance is necessary. You know, it's like I was going to say earlier to Joe's point before he said, I don't know where I stand on this, because I was going to buck back against him a little bit and say, look, I mean, consider the Me Too movement in the United States. Now, mm-hmm. are some men getting falsely accused? Yeah, sure, probably. Yeah, okay. What are the percentages? 1 in 1,000? 1 in 10,000? The truth is there's an endemic problem out there in U.S. society, and I think a lot of us would believe that there is at least a bubbling under problem in football society of violence out off the field, you know, and maybe mm-hmm. the zero tolerance strategy in the short term would work. And I wanted to go back to a point earlier that you were going on about Dr. Rouge, which is can fans deal with, you know, having character guys who maybe mm-hmm. are not necessarily all-stars? You know what? I think it's getting to that point. And you know why? Because fans are getting accustomed to, for example, tanking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fans that know that their team is up to something or have just resigned themselves to defeat, like in Cleveland and Detroit, But fans who know that their team is doing something and working towards the future will tolerate some losing seasons. They'll even keep buying tickets like my Lakers fans do. They will keep going to the games. They'll keep watching. They will have faith. And I don't think that in this day and age, in reasonable fan bases like most of those in the CFL, if you cut a dude who is an accused rapist, I don't think a lot of people are going to have a problem with that. I just don't.
I don't think they will either. For any of this to happen, though, let's remember, for any of this that we're discussing tonight to happen, it's going to have to be baked into the next collective bargaining agreement. And I can – and, boy, if the players would agree to something like that, a huge tip of every cap we could find to them, because that would be a monumental step forward in terms of – the players themselves making a stand about what they think character means.
Mm-hmm. Last words, Joe, on this?
Yeah, if that does come to pass, Dr. Rouge, with the CBA changing the way you're mentioning here, I'm sure that they're going to have a whack load of money coming in on their end to make that big of a concession. Because theoretically that's a good idea for them, but if they're going to make that big of a concession to allow discipline, to allow more discipline into the league, they're going to be getting something back. So I wonder what the price would be on that, and I wonder if it would be too high for the league to make the move, even if they were inclined to do so.
Well, if anybody would be inclined to do so, you got to believe it would be Mr. Ambrosi. No?
I would believe that. Yes,
this is the time. He seems to be the most progressive commissioner I've seen in sports since Faye Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully things will work out well. In any case, we're about to do something completely different. In the meantime, I think I'm going to hose myself down or take a quick bath or take a quick bath in my bong. And we'll be right back. Human again. I trust you guys are as well as I am.
Mm-hmm.
The next topic of discussion, I forget which one of you jokers recommended it, but it's a good one. Little speculation here. This topic comes up once in a while on the show. The question is, if you had to make one rule change in the CFL, what would it be? Now, I remember, Joe, we once had a guest on here. Perhaps you can refresh my memory who it was, who actually said, now get ready, Dr. Rouge. Are you sitting down? I hope you're sitting down.
He
actually suggested that they should get rid of the Rouge because he felt that it rewarded failure.
This guest must never appear on this podcast again.
Okay. Do you remember?
He was a very good guest. It was Quinn Magnuson. He was on quite a while ago at this point.
Sure.
That's right. But besides his objectionable statement, as far as Dr. Rouge is concerned, that was quite a good show we had.
No, that was a very good show.
I will say this, following Quinn somewhat regularly on Twitter, he is, for lack of a better phrase, an old-fashioned football guy.
Yeah.
He would have been at the height of his fame, I think, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so I could see where he would look at something. I mean, anything to do with kicking, and he'd have been like, just get rid of the kickers. Yeah. Now, that would be a heck of a change, wouldn't it?
That might have cut his career short, given he was a long snapper for the most part. But
yeah.
Well, this is true.
Yeah.
Could you imagine how crushed I would be if there were no kickers and punters in the CFL?
Oh, my God. No, they still call it football in Canada, so we got to keep the kickers and punters. In any case,
let's not start any ideas.
Yeah, exactly. In any case, all right. So during the break, Joe bravely volunteered to put his head on the chopping block first. So, Joe, give us your suggestion on how to make the world's greatest sport just a little better.
Well, you have the soapbox. I need to borrow that for a second because I'm going to get on it.
Here it is.
Okay, perfect. So I've been hammering on this since I can remember. Actually, my first brush with this was a positive thing, because when I was 6 years old, the Packers beat the Bears on a play that was overturned, on a penalty that was overturned by replay. That's probably the last positive experience I've ever had with the thing, though. So my thought is for we have the technology to do instant replay, but apparently we have no idea how to do it right in any sport. So I say burn it to the ground. Get rid of it. Forget it.
Wow.
Get rid of it.
In every circumstance.
Wow. Every single circumstance. Because for the amount of plays that it would change for the good, it changes more plays to the bad. As far as I'm concerned, it also makes a ton of delays where there doesn't need to be, and it's now become a coaching tool to try to swing a play that didn't go your way, and that I just can't find acceptable at all. The officiating belongs to the officials, and it needs to stay that way. It needs to not be part of the strategy. Now, if for some reason we just have to have replay, if it's got to exist, then if we're really just wanting to make sure that we don't have a catastrophic screw up that costs the team a Grey Cup, well then fine. You put an official up in the booth, you rotate them throughout all the league cities, or pick a retired official and stick them at every game. I believe the Edmonton Empire podcast had Bud Steen on their program. He'd be a perfect guy for that sort of thing. And every game at Commonwealth Stadium, sit up there with a big red button. If he sees something on first glance that is just so obviously wrong, give him 10 seconds to see a replay and then press the button down to the officials to come check this out. If it's not that obvious, if it's the question of, did the knee go down or did the ball come out and we're going backwards and forwards in slow motion? That's not the type of play that needs to be overturned, in my opinion. What needs to be overturned is the obvious, the very obvious, where there's either a catch or a no catch that's a big deal, a big play either way that the official just for some reason didn't do. I would scratch penalties out of the equation altogether, except for maybe you're too many men on the field where you can go and be completely objective about it and just count the players at the snap. But I just think gut the thing, and if you can, get rid of it altogether.
The referee needs to be responsible, and if he doesn't get it right, he should be like sidelined until his lawyers can argue his case. No, but in all seriousness – but in all seriousness, Joe, how about
this? Man, you still are a little your spleen hasn't completely vented yet,
nah,
has it?
No, nah, I gotta put new water in the bong, I think. Okay, in any case. Okay, Joe, how about this? And I can't believe I'm actually going to defend video replay. But how about this compromise? Okay. Because we all liked it last year when the coaches were reduced to one challenge and that's it, right? That's all the replay you get. What about if that's what we reduced the whole thing to? In other words, no more video replay except when one of the coaches makes a challenge and they can only do it once a game. What about that?
That would be a step in the right direction, but if you're going to give me what I want, that's still not enough. I want it out of the coach's hands. I do not want it to be a coaching point. I do not want it to be a part of the strategy of the game. I want the officiating crew to make the call on this.
Yeah, but see, but
and here's
see,
the
I
gigantic
made the joke
problem.
I'm sorry, I got to get this in here. I made the joke before, but look, it's true. You know what's happening now because of replay, and especially in football, not so much in basketball, and certainly not in baseball. But what's happening in football is the refs are getting lazy. They're going, we'll just call this either way, and then we'll see how the video turns out. No, no, no. I think you need to take away the video replay from even the guy in the booth, and the referee's got to learn how to call it correctly. That's it. That's it. Let's go back to that. I mean, they're getting lazy out there. And also in the NFL, part of this reason, by the way, and I'm not sure how it works in the CFL, but in the NFL, it's because the referees aren't full-time employees. If they were made full-time employees, they'd probably be better at their job.
But, okay, I'm going to step on this point for a second, then we'll get to what Dr. Rouge has to say here. I'm sorry, we keep pushing you off. But if you have full-time officials, how are they going to get better at their job when there's no other football for them to go officiate during the offseason?
Oh,
they can study
is.
As much tape as you want. You can study as much tape as you want. You can watch as much video as you want. But you need to be doing the thing full speed. And that's the point, is a full speed is not something you can really simulate anywhere.
Well, yeah, but you got indoor leagues, you got leagues in the southern hemisphere. I mean, obviously this isn't top level ball, but you're keeping your skills sharp, you know? So
okay. Well, let's go to Dr. Rouge on this.
Yeah.
the one thing with Oz's idea in terms of, you know, do we take it out of the coach's hands completely or do we not? Imagine this scenario now. Your Alouettes are in Winnipeg playing the Blue Bombers, and the video scoreboard operator has a decision to make. Does he or she show the replay of what might have been a fumble, possibly alerting the coach if it was a fumble for the Alouettes versus for the Blue Bombers?
Okay.
You could see where all of a sudden it's like, well, they didn't play it because we were on the road. Joe's idea is intriguing. When he first started it, I admit my first thought was, ooh, no. But maybe he's onto something here. As he often is, but you know, maybe he's onto something here.
It happens once in a while.
Okay.
Even a broken watch is right twice a day.
There you go. But, okay. Okay, but all right. Obviously, Joe's idea is a good one. We agree. But should it be implemented? Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Bot? Well, yeah. I'm just taking stock. I'm just taking stock. Do you think, Doc, this should be put into force tomorrow?
I'd be willing to try it. What was the rule that the league changed sort of mid? It was the replay rule.
Yeah.
So, you know, why don't we say for the first 4 weeks of the season, we're going to go video replay free, except for lack of a better phrase, an eye in the sky who has one opportunity to overturn a blatant mistake and go from there. I'd be willing to give that a shot.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll take that. I'm just worried about suggesting changes because, you know, how can you make a perfect game better? Dr. Roos, would you
like to... It's not a perfect game. As much as we'd love to think about it that way, it's not a perfect game yet.
No. I'm kidding. I'm being facetious. Doctor, would you like to go next or...
It's up to you. If you want to go next or I can go next.
Okay. All right. Let me get in mind really quick. Because most people don't realize it, but this also has to do with video. It's just it goes so far back into video land that we've forgotten and we've accepted it as a natural part of the game. I wanted to say as a preface that one of the things I notice, and I'm sure lots of American fans, and I know the Canadian fans notice it, is the effort for certain play-by-play guys, for certain announcers, to try and use different terms for what the Americans have already named. Like, for example, a couple of years ago, there was this run to rename it the touchdown zone rather than the red zone, which makes no frickin' sense if you think about it. The touchdown zone is the end zone. That's the touchdown zone. But what I really don't like, and I'm sure a lot of Canadian fans would agree, is when the CFL tries to take the American rules and fit them to their game where it doesn't belong. I am talking about, in this case, a rule that I would like to see eliminated because it is stupid and inappropriate for the game, the three-minute warning. Okay? First of all, the Canadian game is faster. Okay? Second of all, the Canadian game has three downs and you're out. Mm-hmm. Why do you need more time at the end
TV
of
money.
The game?
To TV get money.
Well, that's the thing, and that's what I was going to say, is the reason why the two-minute warning was invented in the first place is because Monday Night Football got popular in the mm-hmm. early 70s. And they said, let's throw in an interesting little strategic tweak that just coincidentally will give us more advertising revenue. Now, look, okay, now it has become part of the game. Now, you know, a dude like Brady, a dude like Peyton Manning, makes his reputation on how they perform in that two-minute drill. Fine. If you want to have the two-minute warning in Canadian ball, do it. If you want to have the minute-and-a-half warning in Canadian ball, which might make a little more sense, do that. But the three – I mean, there's absolutely no reason to have the three-minute warning except for – commercials, of which there are already too many. And I'm sorry, folks, Canadian commercials are just not that much better than American commercials, which is to say, bad. So that's my thing, because I really didn't want to go into video replay. Let's get rid of the 3 points.
I'm with you. I'll tell you, I would ditch the 3 minute warning entirely. No 2 minute, no minute and a half. Ditch it entirely.
Yeah. It's not necessary, I don't think, in the Canadian game, which already moves so quickly anyway.
It is a TV moneymaker. Let's call it what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, well, see, but that's the thing, is we've forgotten that in America. You know, we've forgotten mm-hmm. that. It's as though when, you know, Jim Thorpe and Beatty Feathers were playing the game, that there was a 2 minute warning in there. Well, no. There wasn't. Joe, you got any strong feelings on the 3 minute warning?
Well, I do have a question about your concept here. Does okay. that mean you would eliminate the timing changes after the 3 minute warning as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't like that.
Okay.
I don't like that. That's that, again, you know, it's Canadian ball, right? You're passing it so much more often anyway. You know what? No. I wouldn't. Stopping the clock? Absolutely not. You've got to prove your mettle. You got to prove your mettle in those last 2 minutes. You got to keep your offense moving. You got to know how to spike the ball when it comes to it and stuff. I mean, there's something to the 2 minute drill. You know, there's something to that. That's great.
I do like the strategy in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah, it's marching the team down the field, right? You talk about great moments in the NFL, like the drive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the inspire. Montana did it in the Super Bowl as well. Mm-hmm. You know, these, you know, and like I said, like Brady, like, did this for years and years and years and years and years until he became the GOAT. In any case, okay, Dr. Rouge, hit it.
No.
So I'm expecting a big thing here.
Oh, this now it has nothing to do with the Rouge, okay?
Nothing at all. Darn it, I had $50 on you making the Rouge worth 10 points apiece.
Oh, I kind of like that idea. No. Now, this one might seem fair, may seem a little obscure. We'll see how it goes. You can call defensive pass interference only if the defensive player is or does something to directly prevent the player from catching the ball. Hands on the back, not defensive pass interference. Wrap your arms around the guy so he can't catch the ball, defensive pass interference. We have turned defensive backs into too many ballerinas, for crying out loud. They're so afraid to you know, if they get too close, you know, it's going to be, first of all, they go to instant replay at that point. You know, we got to make defensive pass interference actually mean something. Unless the player trying to catch the ball cannot change the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, deep pass interference rules need to change in, I think, all forms of football right now. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I remember that. I mean, first of all, I would say that there are penalties being called for pass interference in the NFL and the CFL, which would not be called fouls in the NBA. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when two guys go for the ball. And that's really disturbing. But for us, I mean, watching in the 80s, particularly, I seem to recall, this was one of the highlights of the game when you had your cornerback jumping it against your wide receiver. Now, I realize that wide receivers have gotten proportionally taller in reference to cornerbacks, but still, the cornerback is supposed to be your best jumper on the team, right? Why take that away? That would be like taking away the alley-oop in basketball. Taking away, you know, increasing defensive pass interference. I mean, why
forget this, you know, forget this. The guy has to turn around and see the ball. Nonsense. If he jumps up at the right time and the ball hits him in the back of the helmet, you know what? He timed it right. Forget this defensive pass interference stuff.
Yeah. See, coaches used to teach that skill where the secondary, the guys in the secondary would learn to look at the receiver's eyes to know when the ball was coming. Now that skill might as well be irrelevant because you don't get to do that, right? So, yeah, you're dead on that, Dr. Rouge. I'll take that one. We'll change that tomorrow.
And the Rouge should be 10 points.
And then it becomes something called Canadian Rules Football, and they love it in Australia.
Hey, why not? You know what? We can expand the game. Hey, look, if Halifax won't take the team, move it to Sydney. Now that's a road trip. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, how about it? I mean, geez, talk about your – what would that be, like Tuesday afternoon football?
Oh, my. Oh, boy. Just – and how many Canadians would go to Sydney for the Grey Cup?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. Yeah, Grey Cup down under. In the middle of summer. In the middle of summer.
It's going to be cool. It's going to be quite something to have the Eastern Conference teams go east to face the Western Conference teams, and the Western Conference teams go west to face the Eastern Conference teams.
Yeah. Hey, it's only geography, so what?
Well, hey, if there are any flat earthers in the CFL, they'd be gone as soon as that happened, right? That'd be one way to weed them right out. No more Kyrie Irvings in the CFL, that's for sure. Right, okay. When are we doing this again, guys?
This is number 98, right?
Oh, I'm going to have to check. I'm going to have to inform you next week.
All right.
Because I don't have it in front of me. If you stall, I can probably find out.
I know we're working on something special for number 100, but I'm not going to say anything more. So, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, so what do we got? Next week is the Combine.
Who's this Mark guy, by the way?
I don't know, but he's having a big bash up there in Canada for CFL week, I guess. I don't know. Joe, what is this? Do you know? Do you know what this – because I don't even know what this is. What is CFL week?
Oh, so CFL week is the Combine, and now they've – bringing in a whole bunch of players as well. I don't really have it in front of me because I don't want to look and see all the great stuff I'm missing in one of my favorite cities to go to, something I can't attend. I don't want to get all heartbroken over it, but if there's going to be a lot of players there. It's kind of like the league is trying to have a Grey Cup happen in March as well as November now. And maybe someday with all the changes to the schedule, maybe the actual Grey Cup will be in March someday too, for all we know. But that's kind of what the vibe they're trying to get. They're trying to take the Combine and bring in a lot of things that will bring fans in. Last year's in Regina was fantastic from all reports here. They're trying to do the same thing in Winnipeg this year. And maybe they'll keep making it a thing as long as people keep showing up and keep having fun. And maybe someday I'll be in the position to go too and be able to actually look at the schedule of events and go, that'll be a great thing, instead of going, I don't want to look at that because now I'm sad. Yeah,
and they'll call it Joe's CFL week. Yes, Joe refreshed my memory. Yes, I remember, because last year what they did was they opened the Combine to fans, right? So in other words, and they had like players at the event as well as, you know, various fan related activities before and after, in the days before and after and whatnot. That's right. I remember now. It's another great example. I'm ashamed to have forgotten, because it is really another great example of the way that the CFL can do fan outreach. To me, this is kind of like their way to get that preseason event that in the NBA is called the NBA draft. And then the NFL is called the NFL draft. The CFL draft isn't quite as high profile as this, so I think this is their response, and it's really cool that they're making their own original event, and it's a way to make that combine interesting, because I tell you, after you've seen the combine once, you've seen them all, you know, basically. And I mean, I saw one a few years ago, and as a result, I took Shaquille Murray Lawrence as the last pick in my CFL fantasy draft, and I still overdrafted him. So you can't get too sold on what you see at the combine. It's fun, but it's you've seen one, you've seen them all. The fan event, makes it, I'm sure, 9 zillion times better. And Joe will find out someday, probably when your child is going to college, right, Joe?
Something no, he'll like never that. Be able to travel then.
That's right. Oh no. You haven't heard. President Sanders is going to make college free in about 6 years.
Yeah, the problem is by time President Sanders moves on, Joe's kids still won't be in college. All right. Joe, send them to the military. Then you can afford Mark's NFL or CFL week. All right.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Find it out.
How is the little lad, by the way?
What's that now?
How is the little lad?
Oh, he is fantastic. He just turned 4 months as of the 14th. He is a very happy little boy, growing. Actually, had a doctor's appointment today where the doctor said he looks just like a Gerber baby. So I take it that means he's cute.
Nice. Happy and healthy. That's the best kind of baby.
Good exactly.
Stuff. All right. Before we descend into parenting corner, we're gonna get out of here.
A good idea.
All right. Let's see, Joe. I know the folks can find you on Twitter at
USFL Tecmo.
All right, and Dr. Rouge, folks can find you where?
And on Twitter at Moretti. That's MoretiPhD.
And I'm Oz Davis. I can be found on Twitter at OzDavis42 and occasionally CFL Pass, although that one's more active when the season's going on. In any case, we'll be active here at the Rouge, White, and Blue either next week or the week after with more stuff, maybe even more theoretical stuff. This was kind of fun. Till then, enjoy your spring-ish in Canada.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter. Ish.